been away. Haven't changed, had much to say. But man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. I told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the podcast to be named later, the official podcast of OutfieldFlyRule.com. Happy to be back. I am Brent Blackwell, here today with Chris Jervis.
Hello.
It's been a while. It's been a good month, it seems, since we last talked. June's been busy for us, and June's been busy for the Braves. We've had the draft. We've had some wins.
Woohoo! Wins! Working on five in a row now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 5-game winning streak for the Braves right now. So
I guess we need to catch up on transactions. There's been quite a few since the end of May, since we took the break for the holiday.
Cool. Do you have the list?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I, in fact, do.
All right. This will be a nice change. I always do this. So
I think when we last left off, it was Memorial Day. We were heading into Memorial Day. We were taking a few days off, and the Braves had just made a trade. Because that was on the 23rd. They traded minor leaguer Brandon Barker and Trevor Belisek, minor league pitchers, to the Baltimore Orioles for Brian Matus and the 2016 competitive balance round pick B. So basically Baltimore's supplemental pick in the second round. The Braves immediately designated for assignment Matus. They didn't want him. They wanted the money for the competitive balance round pick. That basically allowed the Braves another $850,000 worth of pool money and another pick, which we promptly used later on in the draft on, I believe it was Brett Cumberland.
Yes.
Was who we used that one on. So that pick appears to have paid off well for us. So, yeah, we designated on June 1st, we designated Brian Matus. He cleared waivers. He was released. Gordon Beckham. Re-injured his hamstring, went on the 15-day DL. Seems like he might have come back a little bit too soon for that because it was the same hamstring, and he wasn't back but a few days when it went out on him again. To replace him on the roster, we called up Brandon Snyder from Gwinnett.
Who has hit a home run that I somehow missed somewhere along the way.
Brandon Snyder was actually splitting time. He's an infielder primarily, but he was splitting time in the outfield at Gwinnett, because Gwinnett seems to have had a shortage of outfielders this year.
Technically, Brandon Snyder leads the team this year in slugging percentage.
There we go. Jim Johnson was activated from the 15-day DL. He came back, so we sent Ryan Weber down to the minors. John Gant was called up from the minors, and I think he's been sent down once since then. Yeah, he was sent down and then brought back up. Mike Fultonavix was placed on the 15-day DL with a bone spur in his elbow.
Yeah, he's doing all right, too.
Yeah, that's... A bone spur can be very minor, and it can be problematic. They elected to go with rest rather than surgery. Knowing doctors the way I do, they tend to use surgery as a last resort.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is probably something that could be managed, but we won't know until he actually comes back and tries to go through it again. But Fultonavix placed on the 15-day DL. Righty Casey Kelly was recalled from the minors. John Gant was sent back down to the minors. And then on June 8th, we made an acquisition from the Mets. Right-handed pitcher, I believe he's a righty, Akil Morris, who is in fact a right-handed pitcher, was picked up from the Mets. He was on waivers, I believe. We grabbed him, primarily minor league depth. He's sitting in Mississippi right now getting some work.
I'll just interject this on Morris real quick. He's from what I can tell, he's got a pretty good arm. There are some control issues with his game, but he's a high strikeout guy. I'm trying to see, he's pitched in the majors some
2/3 last year for the Mets, 2/3 of an inning.
He's got a fastball, slider, changeup combination. I believe the fastball. He's got a two seamer. And a four-seamer, maybe.
So. Across 7 seasons in the minors, he's got a 12.0 strikeouts per 9. So he's one of those who's capable of making bats miss.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is he's also capable of making the plate miss. He has 5 walks per 9 on average over those same 7 years.
That being said, though, he's not the type of player we've been getting back in a lot of these trades, in that he's not a project in single A. Like the guy we got from the Blue Jays in the Jason Grilley trade, or there was another trade earlier this year with the Chacin trade with the Angels. We got back that 6'8" lefty who's in single A ball,
right?
Who's a project prospect. This guy has already made his major league debut. He's young. There's some team control there. He's
only 23, so there's still time for him to figure things out. I mean, he has a 2.87 ERA across 7 years in the minors too. So
yeah, he's not going to be a key aspect of our team, in years to come. There's a very outside chance he could be, but he brings more value to us than Kelly Johnson did,
right?
Because Kelly Johnson was on a 1 year contract, and we get 5 years of Akil Morris, whatever that is.
You know, probably a sixth inning, maybe a seventh inning at the stretch kind of guy. But if he can hone down those walks a little bit and tighten up his, as many walks as he's given up, his whip is in good shape, 1.136 across those 7 years in the minors. He doesn't allow a lot of hits, doesn't allow a lot of base runners, and the base runners he does allow are the ones he puts there himself. So if he can control that, he probably could be a functional piece in a bullpen, which can in turn, if we don't use him, somebody else can.
Yeah, I also found a FanGraphs article from 2014. It would have been before the 2015 season, so two off seasons ago. And Kylie McDaniel, when he was still writing for FanGraphs, had a lot of good things to say about Morris. So McDaniel, now a member of the Braves organization, was a fan of Morris's.
Likely had some input there too. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, pretty good fastball, and there's potential for a decent changeup as well at the major league level. So
we acquired Akil Morris. Mm-hmm. We sent down John Gant again. John Gant and Casey Kelly have been bouncing back and forth, and Weber, for that matter, have been bouncing back and forth to kind of help our bullpen out. We have some pitchers maybe not going as deep as they probably could, and that's been allowing some overuse of the bullpen, in addition to some questionable decisions by Mr. Snicker. Williams Perez placed on the 15-day DL with, I believe it was, shoulder tendonitis. I didn't see specifically what it was on him, but that was not a good thing to hear. Anytime you hear a shoulder injury with a pitcher, it's usually bad news.
Right.
So we're going to see how Perez peters out from here. He might need an extended DL stint if it's a shoulder injury. Daniel Castro sent back down. Eric Ibar is activated from the 15-day DL. We'll talk about that here in a few minutes, but Eric Ibar is back.
And playing better than Castro ever did.
Correct. Let's see. Ryan Weber called back. Eric O'Flaherty placed on the 15-day DL. So we've had a few pitchers go down. We've had a few guys go down on the DL. That's not good. Dario Alvarez was recalled from the minors. Dario Alvarez was somebody we picked up. He was DFA'd by, I believe, he was also with the Mets. He was primarily picked up, I think, for mostly just, you know, shuttle duty between Gwinnett and the Braves, filling in as needed, and that's exactly what he's had to do. And then on the 16th, Casey Kelly was sent down after an appearance, and the call-up that a lot of people have been waiting on, relief pitcher now, Tyrell Jenkins, who has yet to make his major league appearance.
I just before we get to Jenkins, I pulled up some info on Alvarez. He's 27, so he's not really a prospect, but he's a lefty. He was featured in the I found him. He was on a New York Mets prospects page for this year. He was their number 22 prospect according to FanGraphs, and we just picked him up for
a waiver claim.
Not a ton of upside, but said the. I'll just read quickly. Alvarez has some velocity from the left side and can be tough to pick up. His above average plus slider gives him potential in the middle innings or as a matchup lefty. So, yeah, it's a potentially useful lefty
for us. And I think we're starting to see with some of these pitchers that the Braves have been selecting both in the drafts and in the players that they're getting back, I think we're seeing the way that they're trying to move. Alvarez is also, even though he was a DFA that we picked up off of waivers, 10.6 strikeouts per nine across his major league, 11.1 across seven seasons in the minors. Mm-hmm. Seems like the Braves are moving towards maybe getting some guys who can miss bats.
Yeah.
The flip side to that is some of those guys also still have control issues. But that seems to be they're moving towards a more of a power pitching aspect in some of their selections, which, you know, maybe that's worked out. Maybe that'll work out, you know. It's kind of different from what we had during the 90s when we had Glavin and Maddox as the primary leaders. Right. When they were more of a pitchers.
This is more of a Smoltz approach. Tyrell Jenkins, like you said, was called up. That was about 4 days ago, is that right?
Yep.
4 or 5?
June 16th.
Yeah, so how do you... He has not pitched yet for the Braves because our starting pitching was very good in the series, and we had leads all weekend. So, I guess we didn't have a lead Saturday until very late.
Right.
But still, how do you think he's going to be used? Is he going to be the new guy in that Gant-Weber role of coming in, pitching 2-3 innings, or is he going to be used as a middleman or what? He's not a starter.
I don't think he's going to start for the Braves unless there's something like a doubleheader or a scratch injury or something like that.
Right.
Right now. I do think that this bullpen assignment for him, which started down in Gwinnett actually, is more of a temporary assignment to see what he's capable of doing out of there. From what I've read on quotes and whatnot and a few articles, this movement to the bullpen is not necessarily permanent. I think it's more of a let's see what we have among some of the guys we have, because Gant and Kelly have, and Weber for that matter, have all three been bouncing back and forth, splitting time as starters and relievers. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to use Jenkins kind of that same way. A lot of it, I think, has to do with the way, and you know, I'm not a fan of the way Brian Snitker has used the bullpen. I think he uses too many guys to get out sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen several games here recently where he's used three pitchers to get three outs and none of the guys were struggling. And that's fine in certain situations, but you can't do that every day because you end up burning through bullpen. And yes, the minor leagues are there for us to bounce guys back and forth, but the guys we're calling up are typically lesser players. Otherwise, they would be in the majors to begin with. So, I'm not a fan of the way Snitker's been using the bullpen so far, but I can see Tyrell Jenkins kind of fitting that Kelly Weber and Gant role right now.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a permanent thing, but we'll see.
I think that's where his future is.
I agree. But I think he was pitching well enough as a starter to justify leaving him there as well. Now, they may have done that to make room for him we're starting to reach the point of the year where promotions are starting to happen as well. And it could be that there are guys coming up that maybe Sean Newcomb's ready to step up to the next step or, you know, moving guys up. Chris Ellis was just promoted to AAA. Probably got shelled too, but
yeah.
But that's the transactions since we last left you folks. And been a lot of them, a lot of activity, some injuries. Apparently we're running a private bus service between Gwinnett and the big league club, but that's what it's there for.
Well, we're about, I guess this would be, it'd probably be better. Let's table the team look until next week, because we'll be almost to the halfway point in the season next time we podcast.
Very good.
We're at 69 games right now, so another week will get us a little closer to 81. At that point, we'll do a sort of position by position look at how what the team looks like.
Something else happened since we were last with you, right? Something right around the first week of June.
Yes.
What was that?
The Major League, the Rule 4 draft. Not to be mistaken with the Rule 5 draft. Amateur June draft. Braves had a very active draft.
Quick take. What are you thinking on the draft? What are your thoughts?
I loved the first round. I loved the first four picks. I don't know enough about the rest of the draft.
I think my favorite pick of the draft was the one. Was the number 40 pick, the first competitive balance pick. leading up to the draft, you know, we had heard a lot of names being thrown around that the Braves were targeting. Riley Pint or, you know, even A.J. Puck or Kyle Lewis or any number of people that, that the Braves were going to take. And you basically had two distinct segments within Braves fandom. You had the ones who wanted them to take Kyle Lewis because he's a bat. And you had the ones that wanted them to take the best player available because he's the best player available.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of in between. We need some bats at some point, but this draft was kind of light on bats. There really weren't that many bats available. And the ones that were being touted as the top ones, Mickey Moniak and Kyle Lewis.
Corey Ray, too.
Corey Ray. Ray wasn't even... Yeah, I mean, Ray was definitely one of the top bats available, no doubt.
He wasn't a big thumper.
Right,
he was
and that's what we were looking for.
Right.
And the two big bats available had questions about him. You know, with Kyle Lewis, you had questions about the quality of opposition he faced.
Yes.
And then with Moniak, you know, he's a tiny guy. He's a little bitty guy. And there was some questions about whether he would be able to grow into the power that he was showing in, you know, whether he would be able to sustain the power that he was showing mm-hmm. previous. And the Braves, I think, kind of outmaneuvered everybody by making a smart pick with their number one pick, their first round pick. Took Ian Anderson out of Shenandoah High School, and that kind of surprised some folks. Most people didn't even have him on the radar for the Braves until hours before the draft.
Mm-hmm. Before we do this, because the draft is. It really only gets coverage on a mass level like a couple days a year when it's going on. A lot of people don't really know how the slots and the pool money works.
Right.
So you've probably read more on this than me, so let me try to explain it, and you correct me if I'm wrong.
Alrighty.
You tell me, so I'm going to see if I've got this right. So.
Wrong. Your problem with this is...
Yeah. So, for each pick that you have, it's not your top 10, it's each pick that you have in the top 10 rounds, right? Okay. So, for each pick that you have in the top 10 rounds of the MLB draft, there is a dollar amount associated with that pick.
Correct.
Set by Major League Baseball.
Correct.
It is a slot value. So, for example... The number 3 pick, which the Braves had a slot value of $6,510,800. The 289th pick, which was the last of our picks in the top 10, had a value of $160,500. So each pick declined, like gets lessened as
Correct.
You go through the draft. So those are your slot values, and MLB adds up all the money that you have
Available for those picks,
and that creates your bonus pool.
Plus, and this is something that wasn't covered a lot, and this is what led to some differing numbers on the total slot value the Braves have. The Braves had one player who did not sign last year of that top 10, went back to school, so that money flows forward to this year. They receive essentially, I believe is the way it worked out. The Braves had a total value this year of $13,319,600 to sign players this year.
Okay.
But yes, they you total up all of the slot values, and that's your total available pool. You don't have to use it as it's broken down.
Right. And that's a misconception. A lot of people thought the third pick, Ian Anderson pick, a lot of people thought that since it had a slot value of $6.5 million, that Ian Anderson gets a $6.5 million signing bonus. But he does not.
Right.
The Braves can negotiate whatever signing bonus they want with each player. And the point is, of your top 10 picks, and there are a few extra rules applying to later rounds, but of your picks in the top 10 rounds, they just have to, the money you give them has to basically come out to equal your draft pool.
Correct.
There are minor overage penalties you can pay, and then there are also major overage penalties.
And the big overage
nobody
is,
does that.
Right. There's been 37 instances of teams exceeding their slot, but they've never exceeded it by more than 5%. You can exceed it by up to 5%.
Your pool,
okay. By up to 5%. Now, if you exceed it, there's a penalty of 75% of the amount you exceed it. So if you exceed your pool by $1 million, it's going to cost you $1.75 million.
Right.
The problem is, if you exceed it by more than 5%, you lose a first round draft pick.
Right. So
the following year. So nobody wants to go 5% over. And it's not happened yet.
Unless it's just for some crazy situation.
A Bryce Harper type player.
Where you get a second first round pick and right. you just have to spend the money on them.
Unless a Bryce Harper or Cabrera, somebody like that's coming along that's just clearly that much better. But yes, you nailed it. Just for some of the players that we've got listed here, later on, after the 10th round, actually signed for a good bit of money. Every player after the 10th round, you can give them up to $100,000 with no penalty. It doesn't apply to your pool. If you go over $100,000, that's when it applies to the pool. But primarily, your biggest concern is you want to sign your first 10 picks so that it doesn't affect your so that you don't end up losing money. Because if you don't sign one of those guys in the first 10 picks, then that slot value gets subtracted from your available pool. Which means suddenly if pick number, let's say pick number 109, Bryce Wilson, $546,800 slot value, does not sign, then that's $500,000 we have to remove from the available money to use.
Okay. So all that is important to know for the Braves draft, because it's important to know in general, because the MLB draft is not like the NBA or NFL draft. It has this weird slot value and bonus pool process, and it's important to know how that works to understand how the Braves drafted this year.
And the Braves implemented a strategy this year that seemed to work out pretty well for them, in my immediate opinion. As we learn more about some of the other guys, you know, that may change. But
so we'll rewind now to where you were talking about Anderson. Not many people had heard Anderson might go 3 to the Braves until like the day before, right, or the morning of.
Anderson was not an unknown. He was a top 5-ish, top 8-ish of the high school arms available. He was one of the top high school arms available.
I'd seen him consistently as a top 20 pick in the draft and as high as like 9th, maybe 8th or 9th.
So he was not an unknown. He was just unknown to Braves fans who were accustomed to various sites saying, okay, the Braves are looking at Riley Pint or who was it, Jason Groom or, you know, Kyle Lewis or all these other bigger names because everybody else was looking at them. But what the Braves did was they selected Ian Anderson. They had been negotiating with his representatives prior to the draft, and they thought that they could get him for about $3.5 million, maybe slightly less than $4 million bonus value. Well, if they could sign him for $4 million, and there's a slot value of $6.5 million assigned to that particular draft spot, the Braves have just saved $2.5 million in pool value that they can apply to later signings down the road.
Right.
And we saw this last year with the Houston Astros. Mm-hmm. Daz Cameron was expected to go as high as number one overall. And when he fell past about the first three spots, the remaining teams did not have the money available in their pool to sign him to meet his financial demands.
He was undraftable for right. almost every team.
And he fell all the way down to number 37, not because there was a problem with him, but because it was a signability issue. He was asking for more money than the teams were willing to allocate at those draft spots or that they had available at those draft spots.
And it's common for high schoolers to fall in because, that way, because they have the leverage of going to college.
And we'll see this with one of the picks here later. You know, a senior coming out of college really has no leverage to do anything. He's right. kind of stuck with what the team's going to
do. How many times can college players enter the draft? Is it 3?
They can enter after sophomore, junior, and senior.
And then they can go back every year. Well, obviously, except for after senior. But so high school players probably have the most leverage in these discussions. And then the sophomore would have the next most because he can go back and play for 2 more years and improve his value if you don't give him enough money. The junior only has 1 year he can go back and play, and then seniors have no leverage. They either take what you offer them or they don't play baseball.
That's why you see a lot of high school baseball players who don't sign. Rather than going to a major college, sometimes they'll go to a major college, JUCO, mm-hmm. a major JUCO baseball power. Mm-hmm. And they'll play the 2 years at JUCO, re-enter the draft.
JUCO, you can actually just play for 1, I think, right? Because that's what Bryce Harper did.
You can play for the JUCO, and if you don't sign, you can then transfer to a traditional university.
Okay.
Is my understanding. I might be wrong on that. It wouldn't be the first time.
Oh, wait, no, Harper didn't. Harper went, he skipped his senior year of high school.
Yeah, he took a GED and graduated in high school early.
That's right.
Which is why he was able to enter as early as he did.
Okay.
But, so the Braves took Ian Anderson out of Shenandoah High School, right-handed pitcher, high-velocity pitcher. He has not yet signed because he is, in fact, still in high school. He's expected to sign next week, or actually later this week, June 23rd.
Jeez, let the kids out of school already. It's late June.
And we have seen different numbers on what he's expected to sign for. I've seen some numbers as low as $3.3 million. I've seen some as high as $4.25 million. I'm figuring that he's probably going to sign for around $4 million, roughly.
The draft day rumor was that the Braves had agreed to a contract, to a deal with Anderson before the draft started.
Right.
And that, you know, barring, I think we were continuing to negotiate with other picks, but we had a pick in Anderson ready from maybe the night before. And that tells me that it's probably on the lower end, I think. I think it's going to be in the threes. I think it may be less than 3.5. My guess is 3.5 or lower than that, maybe, because...
And that sounds about right. I mean...
Yeah. So anyway, the point is we're definitely going to come in underslot, significantly underslot on Ian Anderson, which is what led to our next two picks.
And it was a strategy that the Braves were looking to implement because, getting back to the Daz Cameron example with the Astros, if the Braves have more money available at pick number 40 and 44, then they can go significantly over slot and draft somebody who maybe would not be draftable because of their financial demands. And we saw that exactly play out with pick number 40. With pick number 40, the first competitive balance pick, the Braves selected Joey Wentz, left-handed pitcher out of Shawnee Mission High School. Now, that slot value has $1.616 million associated with it. Joey Wentz signed for $3 million. Plus.
So we were able to go $1.4 million over on Wentz because we had saved some money on Anderson.
And Wentz is probably just as good a prospect as Anderson. He just fell because of signability issues.
Yeah, he had some big demands.
Yeah, Wentz, I think, might be my favorite pick of the draft. A lot of people are high on the number 76 pick, the catcher out of California. But Wentz is a guy that I had at least seen some video of, and he looks really good.
Joey Wentz, I'm trying to find the numbers on Joey Wentz's senior year in high school, I think. Isn't he the one that had a pretty good senior year?
Yeah, he was, it was a
0.00
ERA, I think is what it was. Yeah, I'm trying to remember it. Micah covered it when he was doing little blurbs covering the draft. Micah did a great job on covering the draft. Micah Smith, writer for Outfield Fly Rule, covered the draft on the Facebook site for us and did a great job with that. And I think he profiled Wentz there. He's now up to 92, 94 miles per hour with a fastball. Peaks around 95, 96. Fastball has a little bit of bounce to go with the velocity. Curveball and a changeup are advanced for a cold weather high school pitcher. Athletic frame, projectable. That's a big thing that I heard this year, too, was projectable frame, projectable frame. They seem to like that.
Okay, I've got his numbers from high school. Granted, it's high school ball, but still. Pitched 51 and a third innings this year. Allowed 7 hits. 104 strikeouts. And no runs. He won 9 games. He gave up 7 hits in 9 games.
Wentz was the favorite, you know, pick for me out of this draft. And he's a lefty, so that kind of gives us a little bit of help against some of those guys. But $1.6 million slot value signed for $3 million. So drafting the undervalued player or the under-slot value guy first allowed us to make this pick and then also the very next pick. Pick number go ahead.
If you're wondering why we didn't just take Wentz third and Anderson try to get Anderson 40th, it's because there was a higher demand for Anderson because he was more affordable. So we really like Anderson. Anderson is a guy the Braves really, really like.
Yeah, they didn't just take him just because he was cheaper. This wasn't a money issue. It was a money issue in the sense that if you allocate the money properly, then you can take all three of them. If you don't do it properly, you get one of them. So this allowed us to basically take three top 20 pitchers.
Yeah, and we may have liked Jason Groom better than we liked Ian Anderson as a prospect, but the option wasn't Groom or Anderson. It's Groom or Anderson, Wentz, Mueller, Cumberland. It's get. Do you want four players that you really like, or do you want the one you like the most?
Right. With Micah broke it down very well, in, again, in the Facebook group. If we had taken Jason Groom, who was a very, very good pick, we get a top 10 pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
If we take Ian Anderson, which then allows us to get Wentz and Mueller, we get three top 20 pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
So we come out a little bit ahead by doing it this way.
Yes.
And it's a strategy. None of this is, you know, again, this is all, you know, these draft picks are lottery picks. You know, they're lottery tickets. You know, some work out, some don't. But it's not like we chose a guy who was not on anybody else's board. Other
right.
teams were looking at Ian Anderson
right.
just as much as we were.
Okay.
Joey Wentz at 40. Number 44 was also an over-slot value pick. Picked up Kyle Muller, a left-handed pitcher at a Jesuit college prep. Slot value $1.459 million, signed for $2.5 million. So that's another one that's a million over slot value.
He's another left-handed young pitcher that is high upside. Not maybe as high as Joey Wentz, but he's up there.
He was a top 20 pitcher available in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing about Muller, if I remember about him, is he was considered to be at least a first three-round draft pick solely based on his bat, not counting even his pitching. He would have been up to a third-round pick based on his bat. So he's a guy that if the pitching doesn't work out for him, as young as he is, there's still a chance for him to make the major leagues as a hitter too.
Right.
Pick number four at 76, or I know this is a competitive balance B, I'm sorry. Catcher out of California, Brett Cumberland. This is the pick that a lot of people like too. Brett Cumberland, catcher.
I think part of the reason people love it is just because it wasn't a pitcher. I think a lot of fans were just tired of us drafting.
Well, he's a little bit of a power hitting catcher too. Mm-hmm. And if there's something that we're devoid of in this organization, it's catching prospects and power.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of takes care of two birds with one stone. Slot value $838,900. He has not technically signed yet that we've seen. He's been rumored to have signed by a couple of sites. We've not seen confirmation on that on either the Braves or the MLB transactions pages. However, his own Twitter timeline seems to indicate that a deal is either already reached or very quickly will be reached. How much? Financials are not available yet. So I would imagine he's probably going to be 1.2-ish maybe. I'm not sure. Probably about $400,000 over slot value.
Okay.
That's just a guesstimate. I have no basis for that. Pick number 80. If I were to tell you the Braves took Drew Harrington and Drew Harrington was available in this draft, what position do you think he would play?
I don't know. A pitcher?
Yes, he is, in fact, a left-handed pitcher out of Louisville who has been pretty good the last couple of years, have they not?
Yeah, they were good. In fact, there was a pitcher draft in last year's draft that went back to Louisville to try to increase his money.
Oh.
And he got outpitched by his teammate, Drew Harrington, this year.
Right.
Drew Harrington was the ACC Pitcher of the Year.
Drew Harrington, left-handed pitcher out of Louisville. Slot value $788,000. He is signed for $900,000.
Another guy that we got to spend a little more on.
Right.
Make sure we get him signed.
Next, pick number 109, Bryce Wilson, right-handed pitcher out of Orange High School. Another fairly overvalued signing, $546,000 slot value, signed for $1.2 million. I've seen some talk on Bryce Wilson that he's a pretty solid pitcher. I have not personally seen any video or read too many scouting reports on him, but it seemed to be that he was a guy who there was some question as to whether he would sign because he had enough offers on the table from college to kind of force the hand if he needed to. But it looks like we got him signed for $1.2 million.
He is a right-handed pitcher from North Carolina that hits about 90. He can hit 96 on the gun.
Very
that's,
good.
That's all I found on him. Quickly.
Pick number 139. Jeremy Walker, right-handed pitcher, Gardner Webb, $409,000 in slot value, signed for $275,000. So we signed a little bit under slot value there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what year he was at Gardner-Webb, but judging by the fact that he was in school, I would say he was probably a junior, possibly a senior, because mm-hmm. he didn't seem to have a whole lot of leverage.
Yeah, that trade-off, the saving 125 on Walker gets us Harrington,
right.
gets us the 112.
And we had significant savings in the next two picks.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Local boy.
Pick number 169, Matthew Gonzalez, second baseman out of Georgia Tech. Slot value, $306,600. What did he sign for, Brent?
He signed for $25,000.
Why did he sign for $25,000,
Brent? Because he played through his senior year, and his choice was take $25,000 or, you know,
play
go into the workforce.
Seattle Pilots Northern League or something. From what I read on Gonzalez, he is a solid defender. He has been said to be probably a utility infielder in the majors, probably a Daniel Castro type in terms of how he bounces around and plays.
Every system needs him.
Daniel Castro can't hit a lick, but he has value on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So Matthew Gonzalez didn't have a whole lot of leverage. And then on top of that, not being a thumper, not being, you know, anything more than a utility player, kind of limited his ability to ask for money.
He apparently had more leverage than the next guy.
Yeah, pick number 199, J.B. Moss, left fielder, Texas A&M. If you hear left fielder, Texas A&M, you're thinking a thumper, a guy who's got some big stroke, something like that. Texas A&M's a big school.
J.B. Moss just sounds like a big 6'5" power hitter.
Right, you know, wearing his camo uniform. $229,700 slot value. Well, if we thought that Matthew Gonzalez signed undervalue, $229,700 signed for Moss signed for $10,000. He had, if Matthew Gonzalez had little leverage, J.B. Moss had no leverage.
Is he a big thumper? What kind of player is he? Do you know?
I do not know. I'll let you look that up while I'm finding the next selection. So, pick number 229, Tyler Heisong, left-handed pitcher out of UNC Wilmington. Slot value, $184,100. There's been mixed reports on whether Taylor Heisong has signed. It's rumored that he has signed. Has not been confirmed on either, again, Braves or Major League Baseball transactions page. And it's unknown. Nothing's been reported on how much he has signed for.
J.B. Moss hit 6 home runs this year at Texas A&M. He was 16 for 16 stealing bases. Looks like an on-base guy with a little bit of pop.
All right. There we go. Pick number 259, Tyler Neslany, right fielder, Texas Tech. Slot value, $171,800. Expected to sign. Has not signed yet that we can see. I know nothing about Tyler Neslany, right fielder of Texas Tech.
Tyler Neslany. You know, the Baseball Cube is a great source for major college statistics.
Give my sources away.
Tyler Neslany, a little more power there. He had 10 home runs this year at Texas Tech. Not a speedster. Batted 308, 402 on base. I don't know college stats well enough to know if that's good for college. I mean, it's not bad, but he's obviously good enough to get drafted. But
right.
He was a senior.
Marcus Mooney, pick number 289, our 10th round pick. Marcus Mooney, shortstop out of South Carolina. He had a slot value of $160,500. He has not yet signed. He is expected to sign. No dollar amount available on what he would sign for.
Marcus Mooney was 1 year at Palm Beach State College and then 3 years at South Carolina. So I'm not sure what his...
So that would be...
Is that going to make him a junior or a senior? Probably,
yeah, I guess. Probably make him a senior.
Senior, yeah. He's a college senior. So he... I'm not exactly sure what his... he had one home run, and he also was 4 for 9 stealing bases. So I'm not sure exactly what Marcus Mooney's brings to the table other than he gets some hits.
Right. So that's our first... that's the top 10 picks, and those are the ones we're mainly concerned with, mm-hmm, for the simple reason that if you don't sign somebody in the top 10, then you lose that slot value for them.
Mm-hmm.
We did have some... Definitely had some other guys sign. We had... I believe Matt Rowland, our number 319 pick, number 11th round, was from Pope High School right here in the Atlanta area, I mm-hmm believe. He signed for $400,000. Now, that signing, just to give you an example, Matt Rowland, Pope High School, signed for $400,000. He's an 11th round pick. Anything after pick number 10, we can give $100,000 to with no penalty.
Right.
Because he signed for $400,000, that means that extra $300,000 gets applied to our slot value.
Right.
Or our pool. So we actually went over slot on him, essentially. Mm-hmm. Everything from 11 to 40 is slotted at 100,000, essentially. Right. But
it's not factored in the pool. You don't get like the 100,000 towards your pool for that.
Right, correct. But the 300,000 does apply. So you want to be careful about signing some of these 11 through 40 guys to significantly overvalued deals. Just looking, we had one guy, Micah Smith's favorite pick, pick number 979, catcher out of Northwest Florida State, Handsome Monica.
Handsome Monica.
Handsome Monica. He would have done well with Funkhauser and Mountcastle.
Yeah.
Handsome Monica, catcher out of Northwest Florida State, returned to school. So he's going back to school. We don't know. Don't expect to sign him. There's a few other guys that we have where we really don't know what the status on them is. Cameron Jabara, right-handed pitcher out of Newport Harbor High School, probably is unlikely to sign, going to go to school. Zach Kristofak out of Walton High School here in the Atlanta area, unlikely to sign, probably going to college.
One name among these, a lot of these are just you know, pitcher, just arms and players that we don't know much about, but one that I would be on the I'm interested to see what happens is our number 469 overall pick, third baseman from Western Oklahoma State College, Josh Anthony, is a he is an unknown at this point. He may or may not sign. He's committed to transfer to Auburn, and so there's I've found some excitement over him on Twitter. So I'm interested to see. He could be a late round find if we're able to sign him, but we may not be able to because we've spent heavily in other areas in the pool, and that's fine too.
Right. So. So as it stands now, we have a total pool of 13,319,600 available. Mm-hmm. We spent right at about 9 million, giving us a remaining pool of about 4.3 million. There are some guys who have signed that we don't know the dollar amounts on, so that could be a little bit up or down. But basically, we have about 4.3 million available under pool to sign Ian Anderson, Brett Cumberland, Tyler Neslund, Marcus Mooney. Those are the big ones we need to sign.
Okay.
And I think there's enough money to do that because I think Mooney is not going to, I don't think he's going to hit slot value. You know, if he's gone through 3 years of college, he's less than 50% steal rate.
Yeah.
You know, one home run, he's not going to get the 160, no. I don't think. So I think we have the room there to do it, especially with the other guys signing undervalued. Brett Cumberland's the one that would be interesting to see. He's rumored to have signed. We don't know the dollar amount on it. And then we can also exceed the pool value by basically about $600,000 without any kind of penalty other than financial penalty.
Right.
We exceed it more than 5%, we start losing draft picks, and we're not going to do that.
We clearly have no problem just paying out of pocket for this stuff because, right. I mean, we traded for Brian Matus, gave him $3 million
to walk away,
to quit playing this year for us, and just so we could get Brett Cumberland's bonus pool and pick.
Right.
Okay, so that's the draft recap. I'm pleased with the draft. Also, another thing we'll be talking about in a few weeks, the Braves are not done acquiring amateur talent this summer. If you're worried that we didn't get enough hitters, you need to hold off your concerns for
July
a few weeks
2nd.
Until we can talk about the July 2nd international signing period, because that is potentially going to be a very exciting podcast. For yeah. Braves fans.
Yes, the Braves need some bats, and yes, they need to start acquiring some if they're going to have something happen. But as we've seen, just as we went over the transactions earlier in the podcast, talking about the number of injuries to pitchers, you have to have a lot of pitchers. One, just to field your team, because your guys are going to get injured. So you need the guys that you're going to start the team with, then the guys to replace them when somebody gets injured. And then on top of that, you need the extra arms to be able to trade for the bats that you want.
Yeah.
So
can't have enough pitching.
Yes, we've drafted a lot of pitching over the last two drafts. We've acquired a lot of pitching in trades. I still think we need more pitching in the system at various levels in order to keep the pipeline flowing. That's all it's about, is keeping that pipeline flowing throughout the next 10 years. It's not just about this year, next year, 2019, 2020. The steps that they're taking now, at least in theory, are to keep things flowing in 2025 and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So,
real quick, so moving on the week ahead. Today, Braves have an off day, and in an odd little two-game set in Miami on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Let's catch Mr. Stanton while he's swinging and missing at everything.
Unfortunately, we will also be swinging and missing at everything because we face Fernandez tomorrow.
Okay.
Well. But we've got Bud Norris going up against him, who's been pitching much better since he moved back to the rotation. I don't know what to think of Bud Norris anymore.
Other than...
Wednesday...
Let's get another good start or two out of him and then ship him somewhere.
Yeah, Wednesday, Matt Whistler faces Adam Conley in Miami.
I think we have a good shot at that one.
Yeah, that's a maybe. Then a four-game set in Atlanta against the Mets, who we just dominated in Citi Field.
I think we may actually see some people in the stands for that series.
Yeah, we should. John Gann against Matt Harvey. Aaron Blair against Steven Matz.
Ha!
Julio Tehran against Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah.
And Bud Norris against Noah Syndergaard.
Huh? I'll give them one.
They may take one. They may take Sunday. All right.
Syndergaard is so good.
So real quick, how many games are we going to win this week? We've got six. We're playing six.
I'm going to go 3-3 this week.
3-3? Oh, yeah. We can do 3-3. Let's do 3-3. Braves are going
to go. I was even leaning towards 4-2, but let's not get cocky. Yeah. Baby steps. Yeah. Baby steps.
And, you know, the last time we did this podcast, the Braves had a .250 winning percentage. The Braves were winning one out of every four games. As of right now, the Braves have a .333 winning percentage. The Braves are winning one out of every three games.
Getting better, little by little.
So that is improvement, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so thanks for listening. You can subscribe to this podcast through your podcasting app of choice or on iTunes, or you can listen to it on the website. You can please read Outfield Fly Rule. I expect as trade season heats up, we'll have a lot more articles and features coming.
We're also going to be doing some prospect profiles on some of the recent draftees.
Some of that has actually started at low levels. We just haven't announced them much. You can find them on the website, though, but... let's see, like the group on Facebook, like the Outfield Fly Rule.
Come hang out at the Facebook group and interact with us.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one of the Braves groups you're accustomed to.
Mm-mm. So anyway, thanks for listening, and until next time, go Braves!
Have a good day.
Time loser.